The Pasco County DEC is providing this podcast as a public service in order to let you know more about the issues and ideas which Democrats have identified as being very important for voters, and also to provide a forum for Democratic candidates for office. Our podcasts are open to anyone interested in how Pasco Democrats are dealing with the important issues of the day. You can check out our PascoDems.com website and also on Facebook, Pasco Dems, and the views expressed by the guest and host on our podcast are their own. In the case of today's podcast on Guns in America, number 3, the views expressed are those of the host and others whose views have been publicly expressed and are readily available on the Internet. So we're going to today end our series on Guns in America. Right now, we're going to talk today about the mass killings database that reveals trends, details, and the anguish of every U.S. event since 2006. It's a partnership with the Associated Press and Northeastern University. Since that 2006, 2,896 people have lost their lives and 557 mass killings. The horror and tragedy of mass shootings in American schools, churches, and other public places capture the nation's attention. But these are only part of the larger violence of mass killings, deaths by guns, knives, fires, vehicles, and other weapons in public and in private that plague the United States. Over the past decade, USA Today, along with Northeastern University and the Associated Press, have been tracking all mass killings in the United States. When it comes to gun violence, our database is narrower than some tracking sites, such as the Gun Violence Archive, that includes shootings that injure large numbers of people but kill no one. However, our database is broader in other ways. It includes every mass killing since 2006, from all weapons in which four or more people, excluding the offender, were killed within a 24-hour time frame. The database also includes dozens of variables on each incident, offender, victim, and weapon. 2022 saw the second most mass killings in a single year since tracking began. The number of victims was the third highest total, only surpassed in 2017 and 2019. And we'll probably find at the end of 2023 that there'll be even more. James Allen Fox, a professor of criminology, law, and public policy at Northeastern University in Boston, oversees the database and continues to add information drawn from media reports, FBI data, arrest records, medical examiner reports, prison records, and other court documents. Cases are followed from the date of occurrence through the sentencing of perpetrators charged in each crime. According to Dr. Fox, there is some disagreement as to whether the rate of mass killing constitutes an epidemic, as some observers have characterized it, but there is no doubt there remains a significant problem in the U.S., sparking fear and anxiety across all corners of the nation. This is what we have learned. Cases in which someone shoots strangers in a public place usually get the most attention, but fatal public shootings are a small fraction of all mass killings. There has been a spike in these types of killings over the past few years, but the rate of occurrence has remained relatively flat since the mid-2000s, especially considering the growth in the U.S. population over that time. A guy who kills his wife and children, and sometimes then kills himself, is the most common type of mass killings, Fox said. Mass killings take place far more often in private homes than in schools, supermarkets, or churches. Mass shootings in which family members or intimate partners are targeted are twice as common as fatal public mass shootings in which strangers are killed. In our database, the public category excludes killings related to drug deals, gang disputes, robberies, and other criminal activity, which are instead classified as being related to a felony or suspected felony, depending on the circumstances. On average, our data shows that 5 people die in a mass killing of any kind compared with 7 in a fatal public mass shooting. Though these public killings result in more permanent pre-incident deaths, other types of mass killings happen more frequently and result in more victim fatalities and injuries overall. Other data sources corroborate the outside role of family mass killings. According to a study by the gun controls group Everytown for gun safety. Nearly 3 in 4 children and teens killed in mass shootings over the past decade died in an incident connected to domestic violence. Guns surpass car accidents as leading cause of death for children and teenagers in 2020. The school security industry has grown to a $3.1 billion a year market, but our database shows that when it comes to mass killings, most children die at home. The majority of mass killings are committed with firearms. These events usually happen about 24 times a year. Analysis shows non-related deaths make up just under 20% of mass killings. Semi-automatic handguns are far more common in mass killings than guns that are typically characterized as assault weapons, such as the AR-15. According to Fox, handguns are easily concealable and some can be equipped with large capacity magazines. In this database, the long guns category includes any gun larger than a handgun, including rifles and shotguns. Far more people kill themselves with a firearm each year than are killed with one. According to statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention analyzed by Everytown for Gun Safety, nearly two-thirds of all gun deaths in the U.S. are suicides. More than half of suicides involve guns. Since 2006, firearm suicide rates have been steadily increasing. Men who own handguns are almost 8 times more likely to die of gun suicides than men who don't, according to a California study published in 2021 by the New England Journal of Medicine that examined more than 25 million gun owners. Women were 35 times more likely to commit suicide if they own a handgun. Mass killers often take their own lives after shooting their victims. About 30% of mass shooters commit suicide, and that figure rises to over half in mass killings involving family members or intimate partners. According to one study by James Knoll and Ronald Pies in the medical trade publication Psychiatric Times, mass killers are typically angry, aggrieved, emotionally unstable people who seek retribution or revenge for perceived mistreatment, rejection, or humiliation. Offenders are often socially isolated and have limited social support. The ones who are more apt to commit mass murder are the ones who are paranoid and who are suspicious and mistrusting and think that everyone is against them, said Michael Stone, a forensic psychiatrist at Columbia University, who maintains a database of 350 mass killers going back more than a century. It's somebody who has fewer capacities at his disposal for adjusting to the crisis of losing a job or the girlfriend and will feel that life is over. 4 in 10 men report that they own a gun. Gun owners are also predominantly white. According to Stone, men tend to be more aggressive and are more prone to violence. Offenders who commit public mass killings tend to be younger. At the same time, most family homicides involve middle-aged men. As far as the offender age goes for the family killings, you don't have 21-year-olds who have a wife and 3 kids, Fox said. With a few exceptions, victims and offenders in mass killings tend to reflect the population. White Americans make up the largest overall percentage of mass killing victims and offenders, approximately 50% of victims and 40% of offenders. White perpetrators commit about half of all family mass killings and about 55% of public mass killings. In felony mass killings, we define these as being associated with known or suspected criminal activity, such as robbery, illicit drug trade, or gang conflict. Black perpetrators commit just over 50% of these crimes, while Hispanic offenders commit about 20% of them, both more than their population shares. Mass killings aren't confined to big cities. More killings take place across the country in cities and towns of all sizes. Homicides with fewer than 4 victims are more common in larger cities, but mass killings with higher death tolls often take place in smaller towns or rural settings. Why do people commit mass killings? Mass killers typically target certain people for a variety of specific reasons and can be precipitated by such traumatic events as the end of a relationship or the loss of a job. Mass killings are rarely indiscriminate. Also, mass killings tend not to be a spontaneous act of violence, as perpetrators usually plan their assaults for days, weeks, or even months. According to a study by Melanie Taylor in the International Journal of Offender Therapy and Comparative Criminology, a failed or estranged relationship is the most common reasons for committing a mass killing. Perpetrators are often dealing with relationship and financial struggles for an extended time, and a particularly traumatic event can push them over the edge to kill. The motive for a mass killing is often revenge. Most commonly, the killer seeks to get even with people they know in retaliation for real or imagined slights. Sometimes it's marital discord, where a man kills the wife out of anger and the children as well by seeing them as being associated with the wife. There are mass killings in which disgruntled employees kill their managers and other co-workers, but these attacks happen rarely, one or two a year, according to Fox. In the case of losing a job, a mass killing usually results in the slaying of family members. Other common motivations include gaining control, carrying out a robbery, or sending a message by committing a killing, according to Fox. Perpetrators sometimes target a certain group of people, such as immigrants or people of a single race, but target individuals within those groups at random. Some mass killings happen for reasons that cannot be immediately or easily identified, particularly if the assailant commits suicide or is killed at the scene. In the aftermath of a mass killing, all those missed warning signs become crystal clear when hindsight is 20/20, Fox said. It is really not possible to predict in a reliable way those who will commit a mass killing. Profiles of mass killers reveal common ailments shared by many people in the general population. Countless Americans may be angry, frustrated, reclusive, quick to blame others for their shortcomings, willing to post hateful messages on social media sites, or make threats, but relatively few will kill, much less commit mass killings. One misconception is that they are easy to spot, that a mass killer looks like mass killers are supposed to look, Fox said, but that's not the case. They oftentimes are extraordinarily ordinary people, people you wouldn't suspect. Mass killers usually don't have criminal records. Researchers at Columbia University analyzed 1,315 mass murders of all types worldwide between 1900 and 2019 and found that 20% of mass killers had histories of being subject to a restraining arrest order or incarceration. So that means 80% weren't. A study by Emma Friedel in the Journal of Interpersonal Violence that can make examine all mass murders between 2006 and 2016 found that 17% of offenders had a history of domestic violence. For killings in public places, the number was 7%. It is quite rare for a heated dispute to escalate into a mass killing. Several studies confirm that most shooters who kill four or more victims are typically not psychotic or hallucinatory and haven't been treated for mental health problems. An analysis of Columbia University's mass murder database shows 11% of all mass murderers had serious mental illness. There is no mental illness whose symptom is hurting someone else, let alone shooting somebody else, said Jonathan Metzl, professor of psychiatry at Vanderbilt University. Those illnesses are marked by low energy and low mood and poor cognitive planning sometimes because they interfere with the way you think. So planning something as complicated as a mass shooting is not going to be an easy thing. Here are some key facts about Americans and guns. The Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution gives Americans the right to bear arms, and about a third of U.S. adults say they personally own a gun. At the same time, President Biden and other policymakers earlier this year proposed new restrictions on firearm access in an effort to address gun violence ranging from rising murder rates in some major cities to mass shootings. Here are some key findings about Americans' attitudes about gun violence, gun policy, and other subjects drawn from recent surveys by the Pew Research Center and Gallup. First, 3 in 10 U.S. adults say they own a gun. That's 3 in 10 U.S. adults say they own a gun. There are differences in gun ownership rates by political party affiliation, gender, geography, and other factors. For instance, 44% of Republicans and Republican-leaning independents say they personally own a gun, compared with 20% of Democrats and Democratic leaners. Men are more likely than women to say they own a gun, 39% versus 22%, and 41% of adults living in rural areas report owning a firearm, compared with 29% of those living in the suburbs and 2 in 10 living in cities. Federal data suggests that gun sales have risen in recent years, particularly during the coronavirus pandemic. In 2020, the number of monthly federal background checks for gun purchases was consistently at least 20% higher than the same month in 2019, according to the FBI's National Instant Criminal Background and Check System. The largest comparative percentage point difference occurred in July 2020, when about 3.6 million background checks were completed, 40% more than were done in 2019. Personal protection tops the list of reasons why gun owners say they own a firearm. In a Gallup survey conducted in August 2019, gun owners were most likely to cite personal safety or protection as the reason they own a firearm. Roughly 6 in 10 said this is an open-ended question. Considerably smaller shares gave other reasons, including hunting, 40%, non-specific recreation or sport, 11%, and that their gun was an antique or a family heirloom, 6%, or that gun was related to their line of work, 5%. Around half of Americans, 48%, see gun violence as a very big problem in the country today, according to the Pew Center survey done in April 2021. That's comparable to the share they say the same about the federal budget deficit, 49%, violent crime, 48%, illegal immigration, 48%, and the coronavirus outbreak, 47%. Only one issue is viewed as a very large problem by a majority of Americans. That's the affordability of health care, 56%. Another 24% of adults say gun violence is a moderately big problem. About 3 in 10 say it is either a small problem or not a problem at all. Black Democrats, more likely than white Hispanic Democrats, say gun violence is a very big problem. This is what our research has shown, according to the Pew Center. Attitudes about gun violence differ widely by race, ethnicity, party, and community type. 8 in 10 black adults, 82%, say gun violence is a very big problem, by far the largest share of any racial or ethnic group. By comparison, about 6 in 10 Hispanic adults, 58%, and 39% of white adults view gun violence this way. Due to sample size limitations, data for Asian Americans is not available. Democrats and Democratic-leaning independents are far more likely than Republicans and GOP leaners to see gun violence as a major problem, 73% versus 18%. And nearly two-thirds of Americans who describe their community as urban, 65%, say the same, compared to 47% of suburbanites and 35% of those who live in rural areas. Roughly half of Americans, 53%, favor stricter gun laws, a decline since 2019, according to the center's survey. Smaller shares say these laws are about 8 right, and 30% should be less strict, 40%. The share of Americans who say gun laws should be stricter has decreased from 60% in 2019 to today. Support for stricter gun laws has fluctuated in the recent years. Fewer back stricter laws now than in 2019. Among Republicans and Democratic-leaning independents, views have shifted. Republicans are currently more likely to say gun laws should be less strict. In 2019, a larger share of Republicans favored stricter gun laws than less strict laws, 30% versus 20%. Today, a large majority of Democrats and Democratic leaners, 81%, say gun laws should be stricter, though this share has declined slightly. Americans are divided over whether restricting legal gun ownership would lead to fewer mass shootings. Debates over the nation's gun laws have often followed recent mass shootings, but Americans are split over whether legal challenges would actually lead to fewer mass shootings. According to the same spring 2020 poll, about half of adults, 49%, say there would be fewer mass shootings if it was harder for people to obtain guns legally. Well, about as many either say that would make no difference or that there would be more mass shootings. The public is even more divided about the effects of gun ownership on crime overall. Around a third say that if people own guns, there would be more crime. The same percentage say there would be no difference in crime, while 31% say there would be less crime. So it's nothing major you can perhaps deduct from those sorts of things. There's less support now for expanding gun background and checks among Republicans in rural areas than those living in urban suburban communities. Democrats favor more gun restrictions regardless of where they live. But there are still some differences by community type. A third of rural Democrats, for instance, support allowing teachers and other school officials to carry guns in K through 12 schools, compared with 20% of those who live in suburban areas. So what can we come to? Well, first of all, let's talk about this. Which states have the highest and lowest gun rates in the U.S.? The rate of gun fatalities varies widely from state to state. In 2021, the states with the highest total rates of gun-related deaths, counting murders, suicides, and all other categories tracked by the CDC, could Mississippi, 33.9 per 100,000 people, Louisiana, 29.1% of all people, New Mexico, 27.8%, Alabama, 26.4%, and Wyoming, 26.1%. The states with the lowest total rates included Massachusetts, 3.4%, Hawaii, 4.8%, New Jersey, 5.2%, New York, 5.4%, and Rhode Island, 5.6%. The results are somewhat different when looking at gun murder and gun suicide rates separately. The places with the highest gun murder rates in 2021 included District of Columbia, which had 22.3 per 100,000 people, Mississippi, 21 per 100,000, Louisiana, 18, Alabama, 13, New Mexico, 11. Those with the lowest gun murder rates included Massachusetts, Idaho, Hawaii, Utah, and Iowa, with basically 1 to 2 deaths per 100,000. The states with the highest gun suicide rates in 2021 included Wyoming, 22.8 per 100,000, Montana, 21.1, Alaska, 19, New Mexico, 13, Oklahoma, 13.7. That's per 100,000 suicide. The states with the lowest gun suicide rates were Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, Hawaii, and Connecticut, roughly 1.7 to 2 per 100,000. Now, how does the gun death rate in the U.S. compare with other countries? The gun death rate in the U.S. is much higher than in most other nations, particularly developed nations, but still far below the rates in several Latin American countries, according to a 2018 survey of 195 countries and territories. The U.S. gun death rate was 10.6 per 100,000 people in 2016, the most year in that study, which used a somewhat different methodology from the CDC. That was far higher than in countries such as Canada, which is 2.1 per 100,000, Australia, 1.1 per 100,000, as well as European nations such as France, 2.7, Germany, 0.9, and Spain, 0.6. But the rate in the U.S. was much lower than in El Salvador, Venezuela, Guatemala, Colombia, Honduras, and so forth. The U.S. ranked 20th in gun fatality this year. So after all this, we've been talking about the last three programs having to do with our podcast series in Guns in America. What can we determine and conclude? It seems to me that we simply have to sit down and spend more time trying to figure out what might be common sense restrictions, but at the same time recognize the value and desires for those who believe that the Second Amendment does in fact offer everybody the opportunity to have a gun. Somewhere in there may be some kind of a compromise that would say to us, okay, here's a workable solution. Certainly the idea of suicide is a major factor in today's society, and that is something that has to do perhaps with mental health. But at the same time, I don't think that always simply saying we got to have better mental health programs necessarily solves that problem. I just hope that what I've given to you in the last three programs has been some interesting information, and you can then think about this on your own. Thanks for listening. See you next time.